You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Golic and Smetty here.
I don't like time zones.
Welcome to another edition of Golic and Smetty. Mike Golic Sr. here, along with Jessica Smetana. You know what? I never even asked. Do you like Jessica better or Jess? Or do you not care?
Oh, thanks for asking. Over a year into this podcast, I appreciate your thoughtfulness. I know. The truth is I don't care. So that's
See,
why
I'm
I never
amazed.
Corrected you.
You still got a dig in on me, didn't you? You still did. Oh, hey, thanks for asking. We've only been doing this for a fucking year. Thanks for finally asking.
I was waiting for you to ask, Michael Golic. I mean, that sounds weird, so I'm not going to say that ever again. But no, to answer your question seriously, people have always asked me that, and I just really don't care or have a preference. The only thing that I think is weird is when people call me Jesse. I'm not a Jesse.
No, you're not a Jesse.
I'm a Jessica. I'm never a Jesse.
Yeah, okay, I get that. It's been interesting with my son Mike, who is 33, that people still call him Mikey. I mean, that there are some that that hasn't gone away.
So does Stu Gatz call him Mikey? Because I know that Stu Gatz has a producer named Mikey and another producer named Mikey. And so he calls a lot of people Mikey.
I think he just calls him Gojo, which I'm glad he has that nickname, because when Mike and I go on together somewhere, it's like, hey, how do you know, senior, junior, you know, that kind of thing. And so Gojo works for him. So, all right. So you don't care. Jess?
No, I don't care. And to go back to the Gojo topic for a second, I've known Mike as Mike prior to him being known as Gojo.
Right.
And so now I feel like it's forced when I call him Gojo, because it's like a new nickname.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. And that confuses me too. So I call both of you Mike, and it's just even more confusing when we're all together.
I know.
So yeah, it's weird.
A lot of times senior and junior works fine. You know, stud and son of stud is another way that
old man Mike.
You can do that too. All right, Jesse, let's continue on now.
See, it just doesn't sound right.
No, it
sounds like a pet name or something.
Yeah. So, okay, so I can do either, and it only took me a year to figure that out. So, cool. All right. How are you? Everything good with you?
No, I'm fine. The only thing that is bugging me today, not to like continue to shit on you, Mike, is that now your time difference is off of mine by 3 hours.
Yes.
And it's really confusing because you live in Arizona and they don't have daylight savings or something like that. I don't understand why that's a thing, but it really threw me for a loop this week, because I don't know if we were doing it at noon or at 1, and I didn't know what time it was where you are, and it just was a mess.
Yeah, daylight savings time can be a bit of a mess. Now, it was said years ago that this was for the farmers, but it has since kind of evolved from that. And you know, Notre Dame, Jess, used to not change as well. Parts of Western Indiana, yes, parts of Western Indiana did not change. There was a couple of places around the country. So let me, if you don't mind, Jess, give you a little bit of history.
Okay.
This goes back to 1968. Okay.
Okay.
When the
Nixon administration, I believe.
What was out there was the Uniform Time Act. Okay? It was called the Uniform Time Act that mandated daylight saving time. And the state legislation out here in Arizona refused to sign it. So they were like, screw it. We're not going along with everybody else. We don't want to sign it. We're just going to stay where we are. So one of the things that you get out of daylight savings time is you get the extra hour of daylight, correct? When you're
right.
Okay. So the one thing here in Arizona why they didn't want it is because if you've been out here in the summertime, it's the hottest time out here. And the one thing they didn't want out here was an extra hour of sunlight. So
it's earlier, right? Because there's still the
it's
same
just earlier.
Of sunlight.
So right, okay. But so instead of like 5 o'clock, it's 4 o'clock, and sun will be out longer. A lot of it was done so around the country, so that when people would get home from work, they would have a little more sunlight before they wouldn't get home from work. It'd be freaking dark out. If you know, we remember back, you know, back when I was at Notre Dame, you know, well, actually, when I was there, they didn't change. But when Mike and Jake were there, I was just talking about it with them. And with Ben, my son-in-law, who played at Harvard, they would have practices, and it would actually be getting dark at the end of practice. And it's just depressing. So daylight savings time would give you kind of that extra hour of sunlight. So you had that, and Arizona didn't want it because they didn't want the sun out. Again, I know that there's still 24 hours in a day, but...
I honestly, I wish everyone just rejected signing it because I think it's stupid. Like, I don't, and it's now been like 2 weeks and I don't know what time it is where you are. And I know that it'll be different in September than it is now. And it's just confusing to me. I wish we all just did. The Uniform Time Act made everything ununiform.
So here's the thing, Jess. Here's the thing. And I don't mean this as a knock. It happens every year. It happens every year at the same time. You know, like Christmas every year, Easter every year. Daylight savings times happens twice a year.
I don't care. Okay? It's not, but on Christmas and Easter, I get to like eat candy and cake and open presents. Right. Like, this doesn't do anything for me but make my life more difficult because of your state.
So understand, it isn't like 13 of the states. There's two. Arizona.
What's the other one?
Hawaii. Arizona.
I had no idea.
Okay, see, here's an education for you, right?
I appreciate this. This is a good history lesson.
So Arizona and Hawaii, but you don't have to worry about Hawaii. All you have to worry about, as long as our relationship is going, because you don't have to deal with Hawaii. You have to deal when I'm in Arizona.
Okay.
As long as this relationship is going, I'll be, you know, when I'll be in Arizona. Arizona will either be 2 hours behind you or 3 hours behind you. That's it. There'd be nothing more different than that. And at the same times every single year, this will happen. I don't know why that it's hard to grasp.
No, time zones, they've screwed me up. And the other thing that screws me up is when you go abroad and they have the 24-hour military clock thing.
Yes,
and
yes.
And you have to add 12 and you miss your flight because you don't know what 16:30 means. I just wish everything were the same for my convenience, because I'm not very good at math.
So this is when I was doing Mike and Mike for years. Greeny and I would always talk about that we should just cut it down the middle. We should just move it an hour and a half both ways and keep the same time throughout the year. Just at one point, just change it an hour and a half both ways and then don't ever move the clocks again.
Isn't Newfoundland like 2.5 hours forward? Because like most time zones are like on the hour.
On the hour.
I'm pretty sure they've got an extra 30 in there.
So I'm not going to lie. I know all the United States time zones because I live in them. Mm-hmm. And abroad, I don't know. That's when I go to the world clock on my phone.
The world clock.
And yes, because I don't care about any other places unless I'm going to, like I'm going to Ireland. Hopefully you are. We may be out there together in Ireland for the Notre Dame Navy game. So I'll look on there and then I'll know, okay, how far.
It's either 9 hours ahead of you or 10 hours ahead of you. Depends what month we go in, I guess.
Right, but we know when the time change is. It's two times a year. They don't try and fool you at all.
No, but okay? It comes up quick and no one knows the date. It's just like you suddenly wake up one morning. You're like, wow, I'm really tired. And then you realize that it's because we've sprung forward.
Jess, everyone knows the date. Everyone knows the date when
no
we
one
do
knows
it.
What's the date? What date was it? Tell me. Because it's always a Saturday.
It was like 2 weeks ago or something like that, wasn't
it? Okay, well, that's not a date, so...
Well, I don't remember what the date was, but I knew... Checkmate. But I knew when it was coming because it's everywhere. People talk about it. Time is going to change.
Well, we didn't talk about it until 2 weeks after, so I had nothing to get prepared for.
Okay, so now, do you feel you have the information now to know that as long as you're dealing with me, you'll deal with me in Arizona at certain times of the year? And the only effect will be during one of the time changes. Okay?
Sure.
So when March comes, we know what spring means, right?
Spring forward.
There you go. Fall
Less
means?
Sleep.
Fall
back.
Means
More
fall
sleep.
Back. There you go. Okay. See, now we're getting it. So now do you feel the next time change will be on par?
No, because you're going to be living in Indiana at some point, and then you're going to be on the same time zone as me, and that's going to confuse me too.
When I'm on the same time zone as you, that's going
to
be confusing?
I have to think about, like, where's Mike this week? I don't know.
I'm all of a sudden, I'm where's Waldo on the world time clock?
You live in okay, just understand the fact that you live in three different time zones throughout the year.
Yes.
Yes. That's yes. Most people live in one. So
you're right.
It's a
I
lot
do.
To remember.
It is three. Okay. You know what? I'll give you that. I do live in three time zones. That's true. When I first come out here to Arizona, it's just 2 hours, and then it does change to 3 hours. So, mm-hmm. Okay.
You're welcome. All
right. I didn't know we were stretching your brain power that far. All right.
Like, I majored in television at Notre Dame. Television. Not applied math. Not business school. Engineering.
Math.
I can't even name another major that uses math. I'm not a chemist, okay?
But in television, part of television is what have you been doing in your time in television? You've been doing interviews, and interviews happen at certain times, so you
and
have
I
to
always
know.
Get them wrong. I always get them wrong. I have to have everything in two different time zones. It's so confusing. Sometimes the calendar changes it, and then you travel, and it doesn't change it back. It's the worst. Anyways, I don't like time zones.
All right. Well, no. And listen, you're not alone. And it would be interesting. I don't think there's ever been talk. It would be unbelievable to sit there and try and make one time for everybody. But that's the history of it. Going back to
I liked the history. Can we do a history lesson on every show? I mean, what else do you want to tell me about?
I know the history lesson on every show is going to involve me because I'm the old person. So you're going to want me to do the history
of
something.
What history am I going to tell you? Like something that happened in 2006?
I mean, your generation does not think that anything happened before 2000. So
Y2K, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah. So the Uniform Time Act, that was it, Jess.
Okay.
Uniform Time Act.
I learn something new every week.
1968, the state legislature here in Arizona voted to opt out of that Time Act. And that's why we are.
I will say one thing that I have learned a lot about, and one thing that has taught me a lot about time zones, I should say, is Formula One, which we are both watching this season because every week they are in a different time zone and a different race. This week they were in Saudi Arabia, which is 7 hours ahead of the Eastern time zone. So I guess 10 hours ahead of you after daylight savings, but 9 hours. See, now I'm catching on.
See?
Mike, did you know, were you aware of any of the controversy of Fernando Alonso finishing in third place? Because I think you'll really appreciate how silly what happened was.
This is what's good with you and I is, and again, so we're gonna obviously talk some F1, obviously college basketball, men's and women's side, Notre Dame women's still in it. And then
16.
Yes, and then some NFL. But I am still the casual F1 fan. I finished the last season of Drive to Survive, so I'm all caught up, and I've watched the first two races in and out because that has gotten me a bit. I need to do a better job. I think the next one's in Australia, I think, in the beginning of April. So I need to make sure I know when it's going to come because I'm used to getting up Sunday morning and watching it. And I know what the time change can really mess with that.
I think that one's going to be on at like 1 a.m. or something.
Yeah. So
like 13 hours.
Yeah, so that's going to be a little tough. All I know, hasn't Fernando Alonso, there's only been two races. He's been in the podium twice, correct?
And
the
that dude's is like, correct.
And he's like 41, 42 years old, something like that.
He's the oldest driver. He's in the Aston Martin car, which is really fast this year.
Yeah.
And he finished in third place. But then after they gave him the trophy and sprayed him with champagne, they told him that he had a 10-second penalty that they applied to the end of his race time. So then he actually ended up finishing in fourth place. And George Russell, who thought he was in fourth, got the trophy, tweeted about, you know, like, Fernando really deserved this, but I'm grateful to win, blah, blah, blah. But then Fernando Alonso's team appealed the 10-second penalty, won the appeal, and then he got the trophy back like 4 hours later. So he finished in third and then finished in fourth and then finished in third.
So that's why where I'm different than you. When something's over, I move on to the next thing. And all I had heard was it was a 5-second penalty, and Russell was 5.1 seconds behind him. So the penalty wouldn't have adjusted anything. So I don't know. I didn't know. And until now, that it changed to 10 seconds. And we went back and forth and they appealed that. So
honestly,
thank you for that.
It's even more confusing than that because he did get a 5-second penalty and he served it during the race. And then he got a 10-second penalty for serving the 5-second penalty incorrectly. And that one was tacked on after the race. Yeah, it's really silly. Like, the rules are confusing.
Well, you know what's amazing, and I'm trying to think of other sports where in Drive to Survive, when there's an issue like that, how the principals can talk to the head of the racing, like right then during the race, you know.
I think they changed that rule after that happened 2 years ago. Like what happened 2 years ago in Formula One, for people that aren't aware, was like an unprecedented season finale race where there was a humongous debacle. And after that, they changed like who the race director was. They changed how you could communicate with them and all of these things. But you can still appeal certain types of decisions, which is what this team did. So it's like waving, you know, throwing your red challenge flag.
Yes, except, yes.
You know, it happens after the race is already done and they've already like celebrated and given the guy a trophy and everyone's, you know, done watching the race on TV. So if I didn't have social media, I'm not sure if I would have known that this even happened.
Well, it's kind of like the Olympics and the steroid testing, right? When you get the medal and then years later, when something happens, you get it, you get stripped of that medal and it gets mailed to somebody else.
The NCAA vacating wins.
Yes, which is the stupidest thing in the world.
Rescinding awards, yeah.
I do like one of the headlines. Sergio Perez took his first victory of the year. That was only two races. I mean, it's not like there's been, you know, a ton of races.
Long-awaited win.
He does get the win. Verstappen, who started 15th, ends up second in this. So Red Bull goes 1-2 again. Then it's Alonso after the yo-yo act. And then it's Russell and Hamilton from Mercedes. And it sounds like Mercedes is going to already be doing some changes. Toto was talking about changes to their cars. And this is now the second year in a row we're kind of questioning what's going on with Mercedes. Last year they kept – everybody was porpoising for a while, and they seemed to be doing it longer than everybody else. And now it seems like they have other issues.
Well, that's the other whole controversy, which is that they are probably the second or third fastest car, but since they're not the first, everyone's grumbling about why and what they need to do and if the entire concept of the car is all wrong and whether they should make improvements to this car or just give up and start working on next year's car. So, yeah, things are off to a good start when those are all the existential questions you're asking yourself after the second race of the season.
So the one thing I want to ask you before we move on to basketball, last week we talked about some of the newcomers. Are any of them doing anything, you know, at this point, like wowing us as these newcomers that look like they're 10 years old?
It's a good question. Not really. Like, the American driver, Logan Sargeant, has had two pretty good drives, but he hasn't finished in the points in either race.
Right.
So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Like, he hasn't won anything yet, but he looks pretty good. And then the other, you know, rookie, Oscar Piastri, is in probably this one of the bottom slowest cars, the McLaren car, which probably will get better throughout the season. Like, they'll make improvements to it, but right now is just not super competitive. And he finished, I think, in 15th this weekend.
He did. So, he was in 15th. The highest one of the name I don't recognize is Nico Hülkenberg. Is he new as well?
Well, he's new this year, as in he wasn't on the grid last year, but he is also an older driver who was in F1 a few years ago. So he's a really experienced driver, but he's not like he's not a 21-year-old, but he also isn't, he's not Fernando Alonso either. He's not that
All right. Happy for Fernando Alonso, for the aged one on this podcast partnership. I am happy for him at 40. I think he's, 41 or 42, and on the podium twice, even though this last one was a bit of a yo-yo. But good for him. So happy for him. It is next week. So they have another week off, right?
Yes.
Because it's not till the beginning of April.
I know. You're pissed off. What are you going to watch on Sunday morning?
I know. It's exactly right. It bums me out, but 2 weeks I'll be in Australia, so we'll chat about it again then. And at that point, we'll be getting to the end of the championship area of the NCAA tournament going on right now. And, you know, at this point, it's been pretty interesting what's been happening as far as upsets have occurred.
Which of the upsets that happened in the first couple rounds of the men's and women's tournaments were the biggest shocker to you? Because I think Fairleigh Dickinson probably would be mine, just because I didn't know it was a school that existed before any of this. But I also have to say Stanford losing for the women's Stanford team losing was actually shocking. Like, they are a really good team. So I don't know. What were you more shocked by?
Well, I mean, you already have, don't we have two number ones out in both, right?
Yes. Well, Indiana lost to Miami.
To Miami.
In men's and women's hoops. Right. So that's also super confusing.
That's pretty wild.
But the Indiana women's team was the number one seed and Miami was a number nine seed. They beat Oklahoma State, played Indiana. I don't think anyone thought they were going to beat Indiana, and they led the entire game. Indiana was not able to, they tied it up a few times, but they were never able to even take a lead in that game, which was just completely unexpected.
Yeah, it really, really was. I mean, it's that, and who were the twin girls on Miami? The one made both free throws and shushed the crowd.
Well, Haley Cavender, I think she's a 97% free throw shooter.
Yeah,
like, she has an insane free throw shooting percentage. So that was crazy. I watched them play Notre Dame in December here in Miami. Notre Dame was in town playing them. And I think Notre Dame was ranked number four at the time. And Miami was, I think they were unranked. And Miami took it down to the wire, played them really hard. And it was a close game. Notre Dame barely escaped with that win. And it was like 3 days after Christmas. So I was like, you know, maybe they're tired from traveling. But I think this Miami team actually, like, they're really underrated when they're shooting well. And so, yeah, they upset Indiana. And it was pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was definitely shocking. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it would still have to be Fairleigh Dickinson, right? I mean, to be a 16 and win, I think is just, I don't know where else you go with that. I mean, it's tough not to look at that and say, because it's only happened twice. So a great win for them. They lose in the next round to FAU, who's going to take on Tennessee. But I think you have to look at that. But you do always look at the women's side and say there's more chalk. I think they said this is the first time since 98 on the women's side that two number ones have not made it to the Sweet 16.
Right. I think there have been a lot of upsets this year that in the first round that you could maybe attribute to, like, the seeding wasn't right and on both sides of the bracket, really. But when it comes to Stanford and Indiana losing, like, even if Stanford was a two losing in the second round, that's shocking. Like, that doesn't happen very often. Usually the top three seeds make it through the first weekend in the women's bracket because those are the programs that really have the best recruits and put the most into their programs year after year. So you don't see a lot of, like, crazy upset names there. But going back to the Fairleigh Dickinson Purdue upset, was there ever a point when you were watching that game where you were thinking you kind of felt bad for Purdue? Because here are these players that had a really good regular season. And yes, a lot of you know, basketball pundits thought they might be the first one seed to be out of this tournament.
Right.
And those people would be right. But you still expect to win the first game just out of sheer odds that never happens. The 16 has only ever beaten a one once before.
It was only a couple of years ago. Yeah.
It was the Virginia UMBC game. But you feel like a little bad because you're like, they definitely thought they had one more game. And now for a lot of them, it's like their college career is over. And also maybe the whole world was rooting against them because they were, you know.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that the majority, because that's why people watch this tournament, Jess. That's why it's the Cinderella stories. That's why it's the Fairleigh Dickinsons of the world who you end up rooting for. And nowadays people will throw money on them and win tons of money. And last week I was talking to Mitch Henderson, the coach at Princeton, where they're still in it in the Sweet 16 as a number 15 seed. And you sit there, and so now this is the second time a 16 seed has won in the last few years. We've seen 15 seeds win before, 13 seed has won as well. Are we getting too hung up on the numbers that are next to these teams anymore? Because I don't know if parity is the right word because there's still dominance going on.
Yeah.
But we just see more and more. I'm sitting here looking at the men's side, and only I go by brackets, the upper left, you're still, or I'm sorry, the women's side. Let's start at the women's side. The upper left, you have 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's usually where you see the chalk. And on the bottom left, you have 8, 5, 6, 2. Mm-hmm. And then the upper right, you go, 9, 4, 3, 2. And then down in Seattle, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. So you have two brackets that are actually chalk in that. And that's where you normally see most of the chalk. But there's even maybe And I'm not sure statistically, is there a little less this year on the women's side? Because on the men's side, we start to see it more and more, and you just wonder. I don't think 10-7s are much of upsets anymore. Mm-hmm. We see 5s beating 12s all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I wonder how much that number next to the team has that much meaning anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can certainly look at specific instances where you wonder why a team got a 5 and why a team got a 12, and like how you could, like, we all have conference bias, right? Like, if you win one of the big 5 conferences, and especially in college football, like, this is like the perennial problem in college football, is that the Power 5 conferences have so much more weight than, you know, the mid-majors or the group of 5 schools in football. And so, like, in the women's bracket, I know that Washington State getting the 5 seed was, you know, kind of controversial, I guess you could say, because they won the Pac-12 tournament, but they were not as good as the team that they played against, Florida Gulf Coast, which had a way better regular season, but play in a smaller tournament or in a smaller conference. So, like, you could look to specific ones where, like, yeah, maybe the seeding is messed up.
Right.
But obviously, like, making a 64 team bracket is probably the hardest job in the world, or one of the hardest jobs, and making everyone happy and trying to compare when the pool of teams that can make it is so big. I don't know how I would do a better job with this. Like, we've just talked about me being confused with time zones in like 15 minutes. I can't fathom having to assign a 1 through 16 number to 4 different groups of schools. So, I mean, it's hard to say, but like you said, I mean, I do think people get hung up on the number, and when you're picking a bracket, certainly, and you're not like a diehard fan, certainly, like, the number carries a lot of weight, and maybe it shouldn't, but it's hard to, you know, for fans, it's hard to follow 64 teams throughout the season and really come down to, like, the nitty gritty of, you know, is this 12 going to beat this 5 or whatever. It's just, it's so hard.
And listen, I am never one to hold my hand up and say, boy, did I call that, because I know the teams. You know, I just know every year there's going to be at least one 5 that beats a 12. So I usually pick a couple and I'll get one or two right. And it'll be like, yeah, okay, that doesn't mean I know the teams. You know, that just means that this is how the brackets go. You know, on the men's side, we have no chalk at all. In the Sweet 16, the closest was the Midwest, where it's Houston 1, Texas 2, Xavier 3, Miami 5. So that was pretty close. You know, the Kansas getting knocked out in the West was surprising. So there, it's an 8-4 Arkansas-UConn, then a 3-2 in Gonzaga-UCLA. So that's actually pretty close. And in the East, it's 9 FAU, 4 Tennessee. Tennessee's defense, by the way, is stifling. Man, are they fun to watch on the defensive side. And then Kansas State a 3 and Michigan State a 7. You wonder, with all that Michigan State has gone through. Now, listen, Tom Izzo is a Hall of Fame coach. He's one of the greatest we've seen. And he's had his team up there an awful lot. You wonder how much of a, for what that school has gone through, of how much maybe a sentimental favorite they might be for some people rooting for them. And then I want you to talk, add to that. And then quickly, up in the South, it's Alabama 1, San Diego State 5, and then Creighton 6 and 15, Princeton, which is just amazing. But I just wonder how many people are kind of leaning toward Izzo this year for all that's gone on with Michigan State this year.
Yeah, I also wonder about people like me who didn't watch any FAU basketball, who then tuned into that Fairleigh Dickinson FAU game, and now are like, I don't know, they're kind of my favorite. Maybe I have South Florida bias, but they were really fun to watch. That would be cool to see them make it to a Final Four. But Mike, as we talked about last week, I am just garbage when it comes to making any sort of bracket and filling it out. And I'm so grateful that we had Julian Edlow from DraftKings on the show, because he bullied me out of having Virginia as my champion. And I changed it, and now I have Alabama winning. So they'll probably lose next because I'm a complete jinx. But I don't know. I don't even know who I'm rooting for in this. Like, there's so many, like, fun storylines left. Like, you know, like you said, Michigan State, UConn, Arkansas, Xavier, and Texas. Like, I don't even know. Miami playing Houston.
You know, it's getting interesting again. And by the way, my Final Four was Texas and Houston, so I still have a shot at that. And then I have Texas actually winning it all. Then I had Kansas and UCLA And I already lost out on Kansas. I had Kansas and Texas on the right side, and then the left side I had Alabama and I had Tennessee. So I still have a chance for that. So I picked Texas as my champ. So I'd like to be right. So I'd like to see that happen. But if not, I'd love to see someone down a little bit. You know, one of the lower seeds. Kind of go ahead and get this thing. So, but what's been interesting to me, and again, living in Connecticut for all those years as an ESPNer and a Notre Dame grad, we've had, you know, when we were there, when I was there again, this was in 1998, we moved there to 2021. So this is when UConn men and UConn women were just dominant through that time. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids had to go to school in their Notre Dame shirts, you know, and get razzed on, even though Notre Dame won the title in 01 when we were there, and the battles back and forth of how good the men and women were. And then the men, you know, have really kind of fallen off, but they're coming back now. They're looking pretty good. They play St. Mary's in the West, so we'll see what happens there. And while the UConn women aren't what they were, they're playing well right now. They got some people back and playing well. So it's interesting if that program, you know, men and women's side, both starts to get near the top again.
Wasn't there a year where they both won championship?
Oh, believe me.
2013 or...
Jess, I passed that...
2010, maybe?
I pass that sign every day in Connecticut driving to ESPN. They have signs up on what year... They won, and they're, I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, the dominance that they had for such a small school up in Storrs, Connecticut. But it's interesting to see them kind of going that way again. Now, I think South Carolina is going to win it all, but I watched the South Carolina-UConn game, and South Carolina started pulling away at the end of that game when they played in the regular season. But they're starting to play well. And Gino Auriemma, people either love that guy or hate that guy.
We should probably mention Notre Dame, like you said earlier, made it to the Sweet 16. They're playing Maryland, the two seed in their bracket. And if they win, they'll play probably South Carolina.
South Carolina.
South Carolina's playing UCLA.
Yeah.
This weekend. But Notre Dame, did you watch the Notre Dame-Mississippi State game? Because as far as nail biters go, like, that was probably as stressed out as I've felt in a really long time. Probably since the Outback Bowl, Notre Dame play in any sporting event. That was... Quite a finish for them.
Yeah, and we, as we both said when we were talking about the brackets last week, I mean, with the players they have out, it's just tough to think that they're going to be able to, especially if they get by this one, they have to play South Carolina. That just, it seems like a bit of a tall task.
It does. But, you know, we're happy that they made it this far because it's been really fun watching them play. And I give a lot of credit to Neil Ivey for winning two tournament games with a completely injured backcourt. So credit to her.
So we'll see how it all goes. We'll see if your bracket's not already for shit, if you can save
somehow.
Mine's hanging in there anyway on the men's side. I still have a couple of the final fours in there, and I have my champion still alive. So we'll see how it goes. Let's finish up with some football because there's always football news going on. One of the big news the last time we did this was there was really two things. There was Aaron Rodgers coming out of the dark and basically saying, you know, it looks like the Jets, which we'll get into. And then Lamar Jackson, we are, you know, a number of days into where teams could be making offers to him. Again, as a restricted tag that he has on him. A team would have to give up two first-round picks and obviously get a deal done with him. And we know he's looking for that guaranteed deal. And just at this point, there's just no, it doesn't look like right now there's any suitors in sight. Now, again, they don't have to be right now. But it just, you know, last you heard from Carolina, the brass in Carolina basically saying, boy, he's a heck of an option, but a really expensive option. Because it will be at a very expensive option. So that one's still... Well, I think Aaron will end up with the Jets, but what a thing that's turning into. This Lamar Jackson thing, man, I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, right now it's basically Baltimore said, hey, we couldn't come to an agreement. We'll tag you in a way where you can get offers from somebody else, and then we can match that. And right now there's not a whole lot out there. You know, so was maybe Baltimore right in going down this road?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of his teammates have come out and publicly said, this is, you know, this is a mistake for the Ravens to do, right? Like, we've seen a few messages like that supporting him. Yeah, it's weird. It's also, like, I find it strange that it's been a week now since this officially was able to begin, and, like, there still hasn't been anything on him or Aaron Rodgers saying, like, you know, I intend to join the Jets, kind of made it seem like it was imminent, and now it's been a week since he said that, and it hasn't happened yet, and I don't know who was holding who hostage there, but he seemed to put it all on the Packers' shoulders. So I don't know. What is the timeline for this? Like, when do you actually think we're going to see moves for either of these guys?
Well, I mean, for Lamar, that one, I mean, I'm kind of throwing my hands up on that one. I mean, teams have already made moves for quarterback. Teams have put themselves in position to draft quarterbacks, like Carolina, you know, sitting with the number one slot. And then, you know, we're talking about the possibility of four quarterbacks going in the first five picks of this draft. So that means those teams will be set with their quarterbacks and won't be in the Lamar Jackson sweepstakes. So it's getting real iffy, Jess. So, I wonder if Baltimore, while they're looked at as the bad guy, and how could you do this, if this could actually flip where they're going, see? You know, yeah. I mean, no one else is throwing that kind of money that he wants at him. So everybody, you know, ripping us for not doing it. Nobody else is doing it either. And again, we could sit there and say they're the bad guys in this. Bottom line is they have the ability to match and bring Lamar back.
Well, I do think that the thing that's strange is that there's a number of teams. And yes, like, from what is being reported, if you can believe it, he wants a really, really expensive contract. And he wants most of it guaranteed, if not all of it. But there's, like, a number of teams out there that would be a lot better if they signed him.
Yes.
And they haven't sort of made any sort of indication that they want to do it. And I find that to be peculiar, but, you know.
Two teams that right away, Colts, Falcons. And I know the Falcons have had Desmond Ridder, and they maybe want to build on him from what they saw last year. And the Colts have nobody. The Colts are going on starting their seventh quarterback in the last, a different starting quarterback in the last 7 years, which is unreal. But those two teams right there. And, you know, you hear the lines, Lamar has every right to feel disrespected by the Ravens. Fine. I mean, again, fine. Make Baltimore the bad guys. But the way this works is Lamar may not have a choice of where he plays. Even if he gets an offer somewhere else, Baltimore can match it. You know, and then, like I said, this is the way. If you don't like it, okay, that's fine. You may not like it, but that's how this is played, and I think that's how Baltimore is playing it. Right now, you'd have to look at Baltimore and saying, well, okay, you know, maybe we were right to not just give him all that guaranteed money because no one else is jumping at it either. Like I said, there is bad blood, guys. The one thing you should never do is take it personal or get emotional, but that's so much easier said than done. I don't care what level you are of money. You do that. I did it when I was a free agent. I took it personal between Philly and Miami. And, you know, again, everybody's in a different situation. Mine was for hundreds of thousands of dollars. His is for tens of millions of dollars. But it's all relative to the person. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to just say it's a business and leave it at that. So that one is going to get interesting. The Aaron Rodgers one, a lot of that, Jess, is going to be Green Bay can try and hold out until they get a great price from the Jets, right? But then there's the line, are you going to get a price that you can use this year? Or do you have to, if you don't do a deal till after the draft, you obviously can't use it on any draft picks this year. It's for the future. But if you make a deal before the draft, you can get some picks for this year to actually get assets right now. So that's kind of the teetering line to me is, do you want to get what you can get before the draft so you can get people out of this draft, or do you say, screw it, we'll just wait until they up the price, even if it's next year's draft that we have to use it in. That's fine. We'll just wait. So I think that's kind of where we are right now.
Interesting. So we're all in limbo with Aaron Rodgers, in the darkness, so to speak.
It does seem like he's going to be there, though, doesn't it? I mean, it's just a matter of when, but when.
I think so. I mean, it certainly seems like that is what he was saying, but at the same time, like, he does everything so strangely that nothing really surprises me with him.
and I wonder too, because again, there are domino effects to this, and I mentioned this last time around. If that all goes through and he plays there and they get some of the receivers they got, on paper, New England is going to go in as the worst team in the division, right? I mean, that's be right, correct? I mean, because
they signed Juju Smith-Schuster.
So well, that was really a trade-off of Jakobi Meyers, who they let go, and they got
left. Right, yeah. Josh McDaniels. Can we talk about the Raiders briefly? Because like they signed Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
They traded Darren Waller. They signed Jakobi Meyers. Like, are they better or the same? Because I would say Derek Carr's probably a better quarterback than Jimmy G.
I mean, quite honestly, I'm with you because it was their defense last year that stunk. So,
right. It's strange. Well, I don't know what any of these moves indicate. Can you explain them to me?
Here's why I don't know if the Raiders are better. Because, A, their defense still stinks. And I'm a fan of Darren Waller. And they traded him away. Yeah. You swap wide receivers. You still have Josh Jacobs, who had a monster year. So you get him back. And you have Jimmy G. So, but you lost Darren Waller, who I really liked. So I don't think they did much to get better there. Because, by the way, their defense, they need a hell of a lot of help on that side of the ball. Like, I love Detroit went out and did, they had their secondary was an issue. They went out and they got secondary help. There's a lot of teams that have made moves. And now back to New England, they haven't made a ton of them outside of swapping players in and out. They haven't really extended themselves. So you sit there and people will start to wonder, will this have an effect on Bill Belichick's? He's still going to walk into the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's no doubt he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. But he hasn't done a thing since Brady has left, and they are now in danger of on paper. And I know we don't play the game on paper. We'll wait till the season, but all we can do is talk about now.
They haven't really done anything during the season.
No, they haven't, so to speak. They absolutely haven't. So, I mean, again, all of a sudden, are we talking about them? Is this really the worst team? I mean, last year the Jets were 7-10. Patriots were 8-9. It's not like they were that far ahead of them. So, I mean, that's going to be really, really an odd thing because we're always so used to putting New England up near the top, and that just might be over for a little bit. I don't know.
It might actually be a really good division like that, the AFC East. Now you have the Bills. The Dolphins were good when Tua was healthy last year. Aaron Rodgers could be starting for the Jets. Even if he's older and slower, he's still better than probably any quarterback they've had ever, like, in the history of their franchise.
I would agree with that, yeah.
And then, I mean, the New England's probably, like you said, the weakest team on paper, so, but they have a Hall of Fame coach as well, so maybe they'll win some games, but I think it might actually be a really interesting division to watch for once, which it hasn't been for 20 years. It's been mostly the Patriots.
I completely agree. So we'll continue to see what happens there. The draft obviously coming up at the end of next month. And there'll be obviously some moves before that, but we'll have all different kinds of, you know, Mach 5 draft, Mach 10 draft out there and everything. I said it last week. I'll say it now. I think C.J. Stroud will be the first quarterback taken in this draft from Ohio State. But we'll wait and see. We got a lot of time before that. I see your dog has entered the picture.
She's ready to take her nap.
She's such a cutie.
Stop talking. Yeah.
Such a cutie. I bet she knows what time it is.
dinner time.
Yeah, it's always dinner time, though, for dogs.
This is the only time that she cares about.
All right, Jess, I will quiz you at the beginning of our next pod on what time it is and what time zone we're in. Yes, yes.
I guarantee I will get it wrong. But yes. You know, sounds good.
All right, see you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.